Good morning. Thomas Cumrow, appearing on behalf of Janet Baumel, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning.
Ms. Baumel was convicted of 5 counts of first-degree theft and 4 counts of second-degree theft, and under a theory of theft by deception, that she deceived the victim regarding the reasons why she needed the money, and she deceived the victim regarding her ability to pay. What I want to talk about this morning is the court's failure to give the instruction that she requested regarding the theory of her case. There's an interplay between that and the sufficiency that we raised, but I want to talk about the jury instruction. So for a party to get an instruction on their theory of the case, 3 things have to be met. It has to be a correct statement of the law. It has to reflect the party's theory of the case. And most importantly, from Ms. Baumel's standpoint, the court takes all the evidence and all reasonable inferences in the light most favorable to Ms. Baumel. So this particular instruction was based on a holding from the case State versus Morabian, which is a case from this court. And it is a correct statement of the law.
There was a statement of additional authorities filed by the state in the last day or two, which is critical of an argument that focuses on language from an opinion being a correct statement of the law as the basis for an instruction. Do you want to respond to that?
Well, I think what the state's supplemental authorities is regarding the exact wording of the case, that there's been cases that hold the exact wording of the case doesn't have to be used. And certainly, they're correct. And the offer here was, this is the instruction that we would like. There was no discussion about, well, can we change this, or maybe we'll do this, or something like that.
What part of your client's theory of the case did the instruction given by the court prevent counsel from making?
Essentially, and this goes back to the sufficiency, the theory being that had Ms. Cooper known what Ms. Baumel was going to do with the money, she would have given her the money anyway. That was their theory throughout the closing argument, and that was the focus of their questions during cross-examination, that, in fact, Ms. Cooper testified quite a bit, certainly on the first 3 counts, that she, well, certainly for the first count, she had no idea why she gave Ms. Baumel the money. But that was the theory of the case.
And couldn't that theory be adequately argued under the instruction the court gave?
No, because the instructions on deception don't talk that much on reliance. And that was the critical issue here, was reliance, that Ms. Cooper relied on Ms. Baumel's statements about what she was going to do with the money. And that is the critical distinction, because the argument here is she didn't rely on it. It didn't matter. She was going to give her the money regardless. And like I say, the testimony by Ms. Cooper is replete with references to that, that she either can't remember or it really didn't matter. It wasn't until later, when the granddaughter got involved, that suddenly all of this started to come to light, and there was the state's theory that Ms. Baumel was lying and that she had no intention of ever paying any of this back. Now, as far as, and the point being that the court should have given the jury instruction, but that applies equally to the sufficiency. The state had to prove, and I think that's the Casey case, the state had to prove that Ms. Cooper relied on the statements. Not in total, but it has to be some part of the reason that she gave the money.
Doesn't Otherwise, your argument require that the jury believe Ms. Baumel rather than the rest of the evidence?
Not really, because remember, there's not a lot of evidence about what Ms. Cooper was thinking. We have Ms. Cooper on the stand, but she can't remember a lot of what she did, and there's nothing in any of the documentary evidence.
Quite a bit of evidence that Ms. Cooper was an isolated older woman and that she was befriended and that the money was transferred on occasions when a need was expressed by Ms. Baumel for money.
Sure.
Reasonable people could draw inferences from that circumstance that there's a causal relationship between the expressed need and description of how the money was going to be used in the transfer, couldn't they?
Now, certainly for the sufficiency, the state gets all reasonable inference.
Well, that's what I'm talking about.
For the instruction.
That you were talking about.
Right. For the instruction, it's the other way around. But, yes, that's correct. All reasonable inferences in favor of the state. But
what's
still
wrong with drawing the inference from all of those circumstances that Ms. Cooper did rely, even though years later perhaps she doesn't want to admit in front of 12 jurors and everyone else in the courtroom that she was hoodwinked?
But she also didn't say anything in any of the interviews that she had either with the police or the
Proud people don't ever want to say they were fooled, but they may have been.
Certainly. And that's the argument for the sufficiency. But
do the right to present a defense cases deal with instructional error, or are they largely focused on whether the defense was given an opportunity to present adequate evidence in support?
I think the latter, Your Honor, but still.
So it's really just a traditional test about whether the instructions are sufficient to allow the...
It essentially goes to the right to present a defense, because, remember, the jury's told that the attorney's arguments are, A, not evidence, and, B, not the law. So the jury's stuck with, what do we do with this evidence? And without that jury instruction, your right to present a defense is essentially meaningless. So... I see I have a very short period of time here left, so I will leave the remaining of it unless the court has any other questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Raul Martinez, deputy prosecutor for King County. On behalf of the respondent, State of Washington, affirming Baumol's first and second degree theft convictions is appropriate here. And I'll plan to talk about the instructional issue since it's the focus of Baumol's reply briefing. We want this court to hold that the trial court's jury instruction satisfied Baumol's right to a fair trial. Jury instruction satisfied defendant's right to a fair trial if, taken as a whole, they accurately inform the jury of the relevant law, are not misleading, and they allow the defendant to argue his or her theory of the case. Here, the court's instructions were an accurate statement of the law. The instructions defining theft, color evade, or deception, and deception track the statutory definitions, and they mirrored the pattern jury instructions. Baumol was able to argue her theory of defense under these trial court instructions. The aid of deception definition in particular required that the deception must have, quote, operated to bring about the obtaining of property, end quote. Now, that's just another way of saying that deception... that in order to convict, the jury needed to find that deception caused Cooper to give Baumol her money.
Can it be one of several causes, or does it need to be the cause?
Deception needs to be, there are multiple deceptions, but deception needs to be the cause of what caused the victim to part with the money.
For example, if you had someone who was Ms. Cooper felt sorry for and maybe a charitable inclination for and also was grateful for the company that had been provided over time, but there also was a big lie told, so that there were four reasons why she parted with her money. Would that satisfy the criminal statute?
It would. It would, because the statute just says that deception needs to be the cause of what caused the victim to part with the property. So you could have, and also the law states that deception doesn't have to be the sole inducement. It just has to operate in some measure. And so in this particular case, if that were true, and there's real question as to whether or not the friendship was authentic or whether it was just a grooming tactic, frankly, but even if that were true, even if that were a genuine friendship, the fact that that existed doesn't vitiate the deceptions with respect to the ability and intent to repay the debt, for example.
Would that be, so let's say that, following up on Judge Leach's discussion with appellant counsel, let's say that the victim knew that Ms. Baumol was being untruthful, that she knew that she was deceiving her, but she felt sorry for her anyway, and she thought to herself, you know, regardless, I'm going to give her some money. Maybe not all the money, but there's multiple counts charged here. So maybe as to a particular event, you know what? I'm just going to give her some money. Would she still be guilty by theft by deception if she wasn't relying on the deception in giving her the money?
She could not have been under the trial court's instructions, because the trial court's instructions, essentially, when they're reduced to their essence as a whole, they require that deception have been the cause of the parting with the property. So, and that's precisely why we believe that the jury instructions, as given by the trial court, were sufficient in this case to allow Baumol to argue her theory of defense.
What do you make of Ms. Cooper's remark, which the appeal seems to be based on? Apparently, at some time she said, "I would have given it to her anyway." But how do you interpret that? Because it seems to me that the structure of these transactions, except for the first one, was not a gift. It was a loan. I mean, isn't that the idea, is that she was loaning her the money, not giving it to her?
That's correct. It's precisely what the victim's testimony was, that these were all loans, except for that first check. With respect to that isolated statement, I guess the best way to we think that if the assertion by defense is that alone is the basis to find that there's insufficient evidence of Cooper's reliance on the deceptions about why she needed the money, that's not enough, because you have to look at it for what it is. It's an isolated statement, and that isolated statement is contradicted by a wealth of other evidence. Essentially,
does the jury have to believe that to be true?
Yes.
I mean, do they have to believe when she says, "I'd have loaned her the money anyway," that she actually would have?
They do.
Why do they have to believe her?
Well, they don't have to believe that. They have the discretion. They're charged. That's their province to decide whether or not to believe that statement or to believe the other evidence that contradicts that. You know, the isolated comment was inconsistent with the other evidence, such that a rational jury could discredit it. Specifically, Cooper testified that she gave Baumol her life savings in response to Baumol's emotional and desperate pleas for money to treat her son's drug addiction and her own PTSD. The medical reasons were noted in the memo line of multiple checks, and Cooper also testified that she believed the money was being spent on the treatments. I don't know how much more direct the reliance evidence can be, other than the victim testifying that she gave Baumol the money for medical treatment. So when we have that kind of evidence, you know, it's basically, we have to realize that it's the sole province of the jury to weigh the isolated statement against other contradicting testimony.
Did the victim testify that she expected to get paid back?
She did. She did. She was specifically asked, "If you would have known that money wouldn't be repaid ever, would you have lent her the money?" And she replied, quote unquote, "Of course not."
Yeah.
So, again, it was the sole province of the jury to weigh the evidence and to determine what they wanted to believe. And, frankly, on review, it's important to note that the court reviewing a sufficiency of the evidence claim has to defer to the trier of fact on issues of conflicting testimony, credibility of witnesses, and the persuasiveness of the evidence. And so for that reason, Baumol can't now supersede the jury's determinations based on an isolated statement in order to support her sufficiency claim. I think it's also important to note the context of that isolated statement. The then 86-year-old Cooper had been diagnosed with dementia and had been testifying for several hours when she made the statement at issue on redirect examination. So, again, that's something that the jury is allowed to consider when they weigh how much credit to give that statement or whether to give it any credit whatsoever. One final note on that, as the trial court observed, Cooper's statement is a mere conditional hypothetical statement. It's not evidence of what actually took place. Cooper testified as to what actually took place. She gave the money for a reason and expected it would be used for that purpose and that it would be repaid. And that's what the jury heard, and that's what they presumably based their verdict on. With respect to the instruction, Baumol's theory of defense was essentially that she did not deceive Cooper, that Cooper gave the money willingly to help her, and that Cooper would have given her the money even if she knew what Baumol ultimately did with it. That theory of defense, if we boil it down to its essence, is essentially saying deception did not cause Cooper to give Baumol her money. So the theory of defense and the court's instructions are consistent in that they both require that deception have caused the victim to disgorge the property. Consider that if the jury had believed Baumol's theory that the deceptions did not cause Cooper to give her the money, the jury could not have convicted Baumol because the court's instructions required that deception have caused the parting with the property. Now, it's clear that Baumol preferred a jury instruction that mirrored language in an opinion. However, her assertion that she was constitutionally entitled to her proposed instruction is not supported by law. As the court has noted, we provided additional authority, and that authority established that the trial court has considerable discretion in how the instructions are worded. It's also well established that mere use of certain language in an appellate opinion does not mean that that language is properly incorporated into a jury instruction. It's equally well established that instructions should not be so factually detailed as to emphasize certain aspects of a party's case and thus buttress their argument to the jury. Instead, they should be limited to enunciating basic and essential elements of the legal rules necessary to enable the parties to each present their theories of the case. Alternatively, if the court does find that that it was error not to give the instruction, it was harmless error. The jury would have returned exactly the same verdict even if the instruction had been given as proposed. The instruction, as I just discussed, the trial court's instruction and Baumol's instruction all essentially said the same thing. Baumol's instruction said acquiring property by aid of deception requires that the victim relied on the deception. That's just requiring deception, the same as the trial court's instruction. It goes on to say if the victim would have parted with the property, even if the true facts were known, there is no theft. That's just stating the requirement of deception in the negative. All three of those things say the same thing. Deception is required before you can convict. Notably.
Thank you, counsel.
Just going back to your question, Judge Becker, Ms. Baumol did concede in closing argument that these were loans, other than the first count. They were all loans. Focusing on the jury instruction, there's essentially two elements to this deception.
Well, I mean, that kind of undercuts the emphasis that you put on that remark, doesn't it? Because even if Mrs. Cooper was, you know, quite sincere about making that remark, it's one thing to say, I would have given it to her because, you know, I liked her and a charitable person and so forth. But she did tell me that she was going to pay it back, and so I understood these to be loans.
Sure. Sure.
So it's kind of an ambiguous remark.
It's ambiguous. No question.
It's kind of a kind of not very strong thing to rest an appeal on.
For sufficiency, it's not bad. But focusing on the jury instruction, two things. It's not just the deception. Whether or not Ms. Baumol deceived Ms. Cooper doesn't really answer the question. There's also that aspect that Ms. Cooper had to rely to some extent on that deception. And that was the essence of Ms. Baumol's instruction. The jury instructions as given emphasized deception and what deception was and such, but they didn't talk about reliance. And Ms. Baumol's theory was that Ms. Cooper did not rely on the deception.
So in essence, you're arguing that there's actually another element of this crime that was somehow introduced into the criminal law by case law, and that you know, the trial court erred by failing to recognize that the standard instructions weren't good enough, that we had to go on and imply this other element of reliance, which in your opinion is different from causation.
No. It's part of causation.
Yes.
It's part of causation. But it's a reliance. It's deception plus reliance.
The instruction that was given says deception operated to bring about the obtaining of the property. How does the absence of reliance satisfy that definition?
Well, see, that's just, we're talking about deception. Deception brought about, but it doesn't talk about reliance. It doesn't talk about Ms. Cooper.
How does deception ever accomplish anything if nobody's deceived? And you're only deceived if you rely upon the statement.
You can be deceived and not rely on it. You can be lied to. I mean, deception is essentially a lie.
Are you deceived, or you just heard the lie and ignored it? I mean, I think the word deceive has within it that somebody was actually affected by the statement, not just that they heard it. I mean, if you told me tomorrow that the moon was made of green cheese, I'm not deceived unless I actually believe that it is made of green cheese.
But are you going to rely on that?
essentially, well, if I start investing in green cheese purveyors, perhaps.
But the essence here is Reinhart and Casey talk about reliance, and the instruction defined that for the jury. So we would just ask this court to reverse Ms. Baumol's convictions. Thank you.